Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the NBA Daily Fantasy Podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I am your host, Sean Kane. It is Saturday, March 4th. Normally, my man Josh Fern on the mic here on Saturdays, but Fern got to tend to the fam today, got to tend to the little ones. So I stepped in there, I tagged in. And in the next hour, we'll cover the preview. We'll preview the night to come in the NBA. We'll talk spreads. We'll talk injury news. And then we'll break down the players to come up on the or coming up on the slate for Saturday night. We got a nice little 7-game slate here on Saturday night. You could play the early slate. I'm not that interested in the early slate. Mostly play the main slates, but early slate is also available. I'm not going to be breaking that down. But before we jump into that, I want to give a shout out to Kale Dog. Nice cash on Twitter last night. Really used the player pool really, really well to go ahead and went really, really well. Went and used the player pool to his advantage and hit on LeBron and really just a solid. Solid lineup and good stuff. A couple guys cashing, Jason as well cashing. That was really nice to see, Jay. I was a little too risky. It wasn't solid decision making. It wasn't poor decision making, but it wasn't perfect, and a couple of my plays just backfired, and I should have just gone, with one of the original lineups that I had. So I ended up with Westy, D'Angelo, Russell, which, you know, pretty much the whole world was on that. Nick Stauskas and Kyle Korver, who both just kind of like, they were fine. They both put up 10 and then 15 points in the first half, and I was like, okay, you guys are on track for 5 or 6X. They didn't do anything in the whole second half. They absolutely killed me. Value shooting guards not doing anything. Just trying to force too much from guys who just aren't that productive. Jingles did great. He was one of my core plays. He hit a 20 at a salary of 3.7 against Brooklyn. Very pleased with Joe Ingles' performance. Bob Covington did okay. Went 4X. Just missed 5X at 33 points. Cantor killed me. He was doing great again in the first half, didn't even play in the second half, really. Very, very frustrating to see that from Enes Kanter. The thing that I'm really frustrated about is that I made a note that he struggles in back-to-backs, and I didn't follow it. He fell to me in lineup construction. I was like, oh, great, Kanter. And I should have gone with Favors. I was on Favors all day. And then Blake was really doing well, but I don't understand. I mean, how the Clippers get blown out by Milwaukee. They get back into it in the third quarter, and then the freaking Clippers bench comes in and gives up 10 straight points to the Bucks. And, you know, they got to put the starters back in to see if they can whittle it down. Of course, the starters can't whittle it down in time. And Doc just takes Blake out with 5 or 6 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. I mean, he had 38 points. He was on schedule. You know, I don't know how the fucking Clippers can't keep that game close. It's very frustrating. He was low owned and he was, you know, it was a rock solid play. Al Horford, I mean, he did what Al Horford had been doing for a long time, which is basically just enough to piss you off at 4X. So a bunch of guys go 4X. You land at 270. You don't cash. Forced it. Didn't look at why my lineup sucked. And my lineup sucked because I asked guys who were not key core starting players to do too much for me. You know, I asked Nick Stauskas to get me 20. I asked Kyle Korver to get me 20. Those are like almost ceiling performances for those guys. You know, I asked Kanter to perform on a back-to-back, you know, and then, you know, you have a couple of variant situations like Blake gets taken out, you know, and I don't know. It was frustrating. It was frustrating because I could have had Westy and LeBron in there, and I knew I could have, and I just didn't do it. So let's go ahead and dive into the games tonight and take a look at the spreads upcoming. All right, so like I said, 7-game slate, a couple really nice games tonight to pay attention to on the main slate. The Detroit game, that is on the early slate, so not touching that one. And the first game of the night is Toronto at Milwaukee. 203 total here. Toronto only favored by one. Low total in this one, but should be a competitive Eastern Conference game. Like this game from a basketball perspective. Obviously, we know we have no Kyle Lowry, no Michael Beasley. The one important piece of information we're waiting on is whether or not Chris Middleton is going to play. It's really going to change the slate, to be honest with you. He's one of the best values on the board. Be getting 30-plus minutes, you know. We have to think maybe that the Bucks are going to err on the side of caution and either say he has a minutes limit so that he doesn't hurt his hamstring again, or he's going to sit. So I'm not sure. So keep an eye on that. Cleveland at Miami, 215 total here. Cleveland only favored by one. This is a pick 'em in some spots, which is showing a lot of respect to Miami. Obviously, we know we have no K Love, so we are totally good with Bron and Kyrie. Coming off that massive game, Kyrie ceiling game, Josh, shout out to Josh. That was his say. He said stud point guard Kyrie at Atlanta is a great matchup. Yep, it was. No injuries to report on the Miami side. I'm interested to see whether or not we think Deion Waiters is healthy. He got pulled out of that game last night. Only played 20 minutes, and I can't tell if that was because of his defense or his ankle. So we'll see. Hopefully we get some news. Clippers at the Bulls, 209 total here. Clippers only favored by two. Clippers coming off kind of a rough streak where they lost back-to-back games, and the Bulls just beat the Warriors. So Bulls probably feeling themselves a little bit. No serious injury news to report here. We'll know. We got full Clippers, full Bulls. Clippers on the road. Should be a good basketball game. Charlotte at Denver, 220 total here in this one. One of the highest totals in the night. Denver favored by five. Frank Kaminsky out for the Hornets, which we know because on Thursday night when we all had Frank Kaminsky, he went down in the third quarter and beginning of the fourth, and left and didn't do anything. Kenneth Faried out on the Denver side, so Wilson Chandler sliding into that four spot. Don't mind him at all tonight. Memphis at Houston, 221 total here. Houston favored by eight. You know, high total here, good spot for some of these Memphis players to just get a pace up, pace bump, high total. No serious injury news to consider here. Maybe we'll fire up some Memphis players. We'll see. Minnesota at San Antonio, 205 total here. This should be a slow paced game. No serious injury news to consider from either side, but I don't know how I feel about this game. Don't really know how to interpret it. You know, could be a blowout, could be one of those where the Spurs let people hang around. The Spurs have been interesting lately. They've let people hang around. They let New Orleans hang around last night, and Kawhi had to play full minutes, and he went for 50, so frustrating. Kawhi is pretty much always in play in GPPs. Let's just say that, because if he gets full minutes, he's going to go 6X, 5X plus. He's been scoring 30 points a night. He's an animal. I think he's a sleeper candidate behind Russ for MVP. 224 total in the Brooklyn-Portland game. This is the highest total, highest pace on the night, but no surprise, Portland favored by double digits here, favored by 12. Only injuries that we're looking at are on the Portland side of the ball, Ed Davis out and Evan Turner out. So that opens up some spots at the three and the four for Mo Harkless. and Al-Farouq Aminu should get extra minutes. Noah Vonleh getting some minutes as well, but he doesn't really do anything except for start both halves so that Aminu can come off the bench. Anyhow, that's what we got. Seven games, not a bad little slate. So let's dive into the player breakdown and figure out who we love. Who do you love? Okay, so starting here at the top, we're going to lock and load. We're going to figure out which studs we want in which matchups. At point guard, it's pretty obvious who I like at the top of the slate, and I think it's a pretty, you know, solid, rock-solid call. It's Damian Lillard, 9-1, still not really priced up, even though he's been producing a lot lately at getting Brooklyn. You combine the price, the matchup, his production, I think Lillard is an easy cash game play. If you can't fit him in, I get it. But, you know, he's going to go for 40, no problem. The concern that you have is, of course, blowout with, you know, the primary ball handler in a blowout situation. Does he have to play the fourth quarter? I'm not sure he does. The only thing that's reaffirming about the Brooklyn matchup is Brooklyn scores a lot, and Portland doesn't play defense either. So, you know, you look at situations like when Brooklyn played Cleveland, for example, another team that doesn't really play great defense, pace up, good offensive team, but they don't play great defense. At least in the regular season, Brooklyn scores 100 plus points on them, you know, and that's what Brooklyn does. They have no problem trying to outscore you, even though they never end up doing it. So, you know, that could drive up this total even beyond 220, which you like. Dead last in the position to the point guard, allowing 48 points per game. There's a plus five pace differential for Portland, which is crazy because even though they're a pace up team, they're getting an even more pace-up team here in Brooklyn. You know, I think the other options that you have are CP3, Kyrie, and Kemba. I like Kemba the most of those three. CP3 is the highest price. You know, we know he has a great ceiling. I think he's in play in GPPs, and the Bulls aren't very good against the point guard. You know, I just don't know if he's going to necessarily pay off that price. And you compare him to Damian Lillard, who's in a perfect matchup situation. I'm going to say, let's go with Lillard and cash CP3 in tournaments. Kyrie, he's not going to have an outlier performance. I'm not chasing those 65 points. He's not going to do that again against Miami, who's one of the stingier defenses and very good around the perimeter. So that's just not going to happen again. He's in a competitive game, but Dame checks all the boxes for pace, matchup, position, all that good stuff. So Damian Lillard, it is. Oh, and I forgot to mention, Kemba is also in a very good pace and position to succeed. So I have no problem stacking Dame and Kemba together if you want to spend at point guard tonight. At shooting guard, I think for me it's DeMar DeRozan at 9-9. You have Giannis and James Harden on this slate. James Harden is going to be in a pace down spot. You know, I don't think Memphis can necessarily stop him, to be completely honest with you. You know, and I have no problem rostering James Harden. I just think that given the recent production slump, it's going to be kind of like we talked about Giannis yesterday, even though Giannis had a nice 40-point outing against the Clippers. I think Harden, for me, it's kind of one of those, like, let's do a wait and see. You know, he's had kind of an up and down year against Memphis. He's had, you know, one game where he went for 55 and then one game where he went for 39. You know, when Memphis wants to slow this down and grind it out, they can do that, and that takes away a lot of the upside of Harden's game, you know, push the ball in transition, you know, and basically decide, am I going to go straight to the rack or am I going to flip it out to the arc? So I don't know. Harden to me seems like a challenging investment of all that money. Of course, he is still James Harden, so you never are nervous about him producing. Is he going to go 4X for you is my concern. Anyway, DeRozan for me, it is DeRozan, massive, like almost a league-high usage rate at almost like 40%. We're talking Boogie levels, Boogie Sacramento levels. He had a massive bounce back last night in Washington. He and Bradley Beal just traded buckets. He went for 51. Bradley Beal went for 41. Decent matchup here, competitive game according to Vegas. In my mind, his range of outcomes very similar to Giannis's. Anywhere north of 42, 43 points with a 50-point ceiling. So I'll take the cheaper player in this case. You know, especially if Matt Middleton is playing, I think that the pressure is less on Giannis to score in this situation. DeMar has a little bit of a better situation from, you know, an offensive perspective. He's only faced the Bucks once this year. He had 36 points. That was with Kyle Lowry in the lineup, which means to me that, you know, DeMar DeRozan had a normal production night against these guys. There's nothing outlierish about 36 DeMar DeRozan points with Kyle Lowry in the lineup. We haven't seen exceptional production from the wings against Bucks recently. With the return of Middleton, it seems like their perimeter defense is improving. They're ninth in DVP to the position. They're only allowing 24 points in the last five games. You know, I think that there's enough in the mid-tier here for you to fade DeRozan. I have no problem going away from him. But, you know, GPP, he's definitely viable. Small forward, we've got LeBron and Jimmy at the top of the slate. LeBron at 11-1 going back to Miami. Jimmy at 9-1 getting the Clips at home. You know, I don't know how much I'm going to buy the LeBron revenge game narrative, but I will buy the LeBron has no Kevin Love and he's the best player in the NBA narrative. Miami stout defense, only allowing 101 points per game. That's the fifth best mark in the league, and that's why Vegas says the Cavs are only favored by one here. He's coming off the back-to-back, and LeBron has only, you know, that only affects his average by 2 points. He's averages 46 points on the back-to-back versus 48 on the season. This year against the Heat, he already had 51 plus FD points. Last year, he averaged perfect LeBron numbers against this team. 28-5-5 with a block and a steal in 32 minutes. That's LeBron. He's going to do LeBron things. Exactly what you want him to do. Very predictable in this case. It's not a great DVP matchup, but you know what? I think LeBron is basically matchup proof. I don't really see a problem. It's when a team defense is really, really excellent that LeBron might struggle. And this just really isn't the case, you know. The team defense for Miami is good, not great. This isn't the Golden State Warriors team defense with Kevin Durant playing, you know, at playoff tilt. So he feels like a safe investment to me. He's got a floor in the mid-40s, a ceiling of 65. I don't think you're ever going to feel bad about rostering LeBron James in a decent matchup. I see him hitting 50 tonight, maybe on the nose right there. Which, you know, is 5 points off of 5X value. Jimmy, a very good investment. He snapped out of his skid against the Warriors. That was a very low scoring game. And let's be clear, if the shooting improves in the fourth quarter in that game, Jimmy goes up probably for closer to 50 points. Okay. He basically hit 40 by the end of the third and then stopped scoring, except for some free throws and garbage time minutes. He's going to have a DVP advantage over LeBron, but a lower total, lower pace against the Clippers. I think you expect a normal range of outcomes from Jimmy, anywhere north of 40. I don't know that you expect a 50-point game here. This year against the Clippers, he only had 30 points in a previous matchup. That's something he's been doing lately, you know, letting Dwayne Wade do some work, giving some buckets over to him. Given the DVP, however, I really like him. Clippers are bottom half of the league in the DVP as an individual defender. Mbamute is very good, but I think positionally, for whatever reason, they give up production to the wings, the Clippers do. I think what's an interesting comparison here is Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton and Jimmy kind of profile similarly as far as size, ball handling. Last night I was watching the Clippers game. Middleton was handling the ball. He was running the point. He was distributing. He was basically, you know, he was doing a lot of the same things Jimmy does. They have very similar games, very similar styles. Obviously, Middleton isn't a franchise player, but he's a very solid three. You know, I think the massive difference is that in their game is that Middleton is a much more effective catch and shoot, whereas Jimmy is a single pull-up player, two dribble pull-up player. This is basically according to the comparison that I ran on the NBA stats, their shot tracking dashboard. Middleton is a really, really good catch and shoot, whereas Jimmy's not really running a ton of catch and shoot. He's much more 1-2 dribbles and pull up in the mid range or in the interior paint. You know, I think we have to then think about what does Mbamute do with those kinds of shots. Now, Middleton shot pretty well in that game. You know, he's not a perfect interior defender, Mbamute is. He will let you get to the rim and you can finish at the rim because he's slightly undersized. But what he is very good is challenging the mid-range. So if Jimmy doesn't settle for the mid-range, I think he's got a really good shot of doing some, you know, getting himself above 45 points. But if Jimmy settles for the mid-range here in this situation and doesn't try to get to the rim and draw fouls, like that's his best game, then, you know, he may suffer here because Mbamute is his best defensive shooting percentage is in the mid range, right? In that 10-foot range, according to the defensive shots tracking dashboard. So I think he's a good investment. I don't think he's a perfect investment. And if you're comparing him to LeBron, I think LeBron is a much safer investment. At power forward, it's Nikola Jokic at 9-9. I like Nikola Jokic quite a bit against Charlotte here. He's bounced back. His minutes are solid. He's gotten 30-plus minutes in both of the last two games. He's coming off of a solid night against Milwaukee. He's at home in Denver. Charlotte is bottom half of the league against the power forward and the center. They're terrible in the front court. They're allowing 60 points per game to forwards, and some of the highest numbers of rebounds and assists on the slate. Blake Griffin just went for 65 against them, against the Suns. Alan Williams went for 30-plus, as well as Marquise Chris going for 20. I'm not scared of the Charlotte front court whatsoever. We've been attacking them at the power forward. I know he plays center, and I'm not really scared of Cody Zeller either. I mean, I think Zeller is a size matchup for him. But Zeller is not, you know, a defensive specialist necessarily, and I don't necessarily see him as an, you know, there's not a ton of athleticism to Zeller. So I don't mind Jokic at all. I think what's great here is they profile very similar to the Bucks in my mind in the way that they match up against the front court. They allow a decent amount of scoring. They allow rebounds. They allow assists. And that's what you want for Jokic to reach his ceiling. You know, and against the Bucks, he only had 14 points, but he had 14 rebounds and 10 assists, which is why he reached that triple-double and 52 fantasy points. So if we're looking at what Charlotte allows to the forwards as far as rebounds and assists, then we absolutely see an opportunity for Jokic to, you know, really do some good work here and maybe hit his ceiling. He's safe here, high total, high pace game, at home, reasonable price. I don't mind Nikola Jokic at all. I see him going over 40 pretty easily, probably 45. Gasol here, Marc Gasol at 8-2. Excellent matchup tonight. He's going to have a great total, great pace, great DVP. Interestingly enough, you also want Marc Gasol on the road. He's much better on the road than he is at home in Memphis. I think that's because teams struggle in Memphis, and he just doesn't have to do as much. This year at Houston, Gasol has only averaged 33 FD points. The two performances, one performance of 31 and 33 points, but this most recent performance, he went for 44. This is telling to me. This means you're capitalizing on the Rockets' poor rebounding and interior defense that's been of late. We talked about how the Rockets' interior is trending down over the last 3 months. He took 20-plus shots in that game, which is plus 4 on his recent average of 16. If we are expecting Gasol to continue to see that kind of game plan emphasis where he's getting 16 to 20 attempts, then I think we can expect Gasol to go for over 40 points against the Rockets team. You know, the pace-up situation, extra rebounds, extra attempts. It should be a competitive game. Even Vegas is favoring the Rockets by 8, which means Memphis is going to have to really play in this one. You know, I think in those other games against the Rockets, he only took 10 shots. So you kind of have to like him basically for the trend of more attempts and poor Rockets defense on the inside. He's a good cash game play, but of course with that 8K, you could easily spend up at point guard. You could easily spend up, you know, in other spots. So I think that Gasol profiles as a GPP play while all the cash field will be on Nurkic, guaranteed. All the cash field will be on Nurkic, as they should, by the way. It's one of those like damned if you do, damned if you don't type situations, because there's going to be owned above 60%. I think that Marc Gasol is rock solid in GPPs to try and maybe capitalize on, you know, if Nurkic stumbles a little bit or gets in foul trouble. I don't see that, but, you know, I think he's in play in your tournaments. All right, let's move on to the fantasy crowd here. Mid-price guys to fill into the 5 to 8K range. These are the guys you want to fill in around your studs, you know, next to your value plays. You want to, you know, structurally speaking, as you're looking at your lineup, you want to be heavy on grout guys in cash games. No question in my mind, that's where, you know, a lot of players go wrong, I think, in trying to force in stars and scrubs. I did it last night. It hurt me. I picked, you know, I should have redistributed off of Blake, or maybe gone with LeBron instead of Blake. But anyway, not important. The important thing to know is that this is where you want to put a lot of your good research in and make sure that you have these nice, solid mid-tier players who are going 5, possibly 6X. That's where you maximize your upside. My point guard here is Goran Dragic at 7'6". He's got Cleveland. Great DVP situation against Kyrie Irving. They're 25th, fourth in the league against the point guard with a -2.3 defensive real plus minus. The only spot that's better on the board is against Denver, Kemba. So think about that. That's interesting. Dragic is the Heat's leading usage the leading number in usage on the first unit. He's also their leading scorer with 21 points. He's averaged 32 FD points in the last five. But of course, that number's dragged down because he sat out the entire fourth quarter against Philadelphia when they blew them out. Plus DVP matchups like Brooklyn, like New York, like Chicago. Dragic has hit 40 FD points consistently. I see him tonight going above 35 as well. I love 5X value for Goran Dragic tonight against Kyrie at home. At shooting guard, Deion Waiters, CJ McCollum, and I think a pivot is Nick Batum, but let's talk about all three. McCollum is the most obvious one. It's a no-brainer. He's got rock-solid minutes. He's an excellent 40-point upside player, one of the best pace and DVP situations on the slate. I love McCollum in this spot. I don't see any reason not to play him. His price is extremely nice, given this matchup and his ceiling. At 7'3", you easily see him going for 35-plus fantasy points. McCollum will be chalky, but I think there's good reason for that, just like there's good reason to play Nurkic. However, if you want to pivot off McCollum, I think there's two good options. The first is Deion Waiters. Well, let me ask you guys a question. What do Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee have in common? Yes, they're both shooting guards. Yes, they've both played in Madison Square Garden. Yes, they're both three-point specialists, but they're also shooting guards who recently had ceiling games against the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers do not guard the perimeter. They cannot guard the shooting guard. It's their weakest spot. Bradley Beal just showed you against the Cavaliers a couple weeks ago how susceptible they are when he went off for 50 points. I think Deion Waiters is in a great position here, given price and matchup, to really go for 5X. My only concern with Deion Waiters is health. I don't know if he's losing minutes because his ankle is bothering him. I don't know if he's losing minutes because he's not playing defense. I don't know if he's losing minutes, so I would love, if you have insight onto why you think Deion Waiters is losing minutes, let's talk about it. I think he's risky, but we know he has 40-point upside. Deion is, that's kind of what he does, right? I think the best pivot, though, on the board is Nick Batum. He's priced way down for what is a 40-point ceiling. At 6'8", he's got Denver in one of the highest pace games of the night. They're one of the worst teams against the shooting guard. It's the only DVP position that's it's just almost as good as Portland. You actually have a lot of really, really advantageous shooting guard matchups tonight in the mid tier. You have some of the worst teams against the shooting guard: Cleveland, Portland, Denver, Brooklyn, and Charlotte. Those are five of the worst teams against the shooting guard tonight. So I think you're spending 6-7K on both of your shooting guards. I don't really see any reason not to. You know, it's a really, really nice place to try and maximize, maybe get 6X out of two of these guys. So Batum is in a great position, pace up, opportunity to bounce back. The interesting thing that I think is we should note is Batum actually plays a lot better with Cody Zeller on the floor. So without Frank Kaminsky in the lineup, Zeller and Batum have really nice pick and roll chemistry. They run pick and rolls together. So I think Batum is in an interesting position here to succeed in a pace up bounce back game for him at what is almost a season low price. At small forward, we've got two spots here, Wilson Chandler and Chris Middleton. Chandler has some of the most consistent usage and minutes for the Nuggets on the first unit with Fareed out. You know, he sees 20% plus usage, 32 minutes in the last five games. He slid into the four, but I mean, he kind of plays like this stretch four wing. He definitely doesn't play the same role that Kenneth Fareed plays. He's more of like a stretch four wing. He's basically a point per minute type guy. He's got a great matchup against the power forward, against the small forward with Charlotte. They're dead middle of the pack against small forward, and then they're below that bottom 10 against the power forward. You know, Chandler is rock solid at his 6'3 price. I think you're very easily locking him in for 30 fantasy points. Middleton, though, has been amazing lately. Basically going 7x in the last 6 or 7x in the last two games. He's underpriced given the role, given the minutes. You know, the algorithm in FanDuel just hasn't caught up, basically, is what we're seeing here. After the back-to-back tonight, you will see Middleton's price be up in the sixes, guaranteed. The matchup's not perfect with Damari Carroll, who's a pretty physical defender, but I don't mind him. The question is he going to play or is he going to play limited minutes? So you have to keep your eye on the news. If you're going to roll out Middleton, you really have to be careful and make sure that kid doesn't limit him coming out of the back-to-back or that he's not sitting. So he's risky in that respect for kind of a late scratch or limited minutes situation. Power forward, I really like Al-Farouq Aminu here at 5'4". Aminu's got one of the best front court matchups in the night against Brooklyn. He's a point per minute guy. He's got a 30-point ceiling, and he's priced at 5'4". He's a solid player. He should be able to get some great minutes and great run against a Brooklyn front court that's 29th to the position. The other one that I really don't mind if as a pivot is James Johnson at 6K. He had a great night last night, and he has great nights all the time because he's just so freaking consistent. He's the glue guy. He's the do-it-all guy. He's the hustle man. He's the defense. He's the motor that the Heat need. You know, he's just an excellent all-around player. He gets 30 plus minutes. I think he's going to be the one who has to play LeBron in this situation. That's not a great matchup here, but that does mean that he's going to get 32 minutes in this game. And as a guy who's going to play all the way down the stretch, you know, and we know he can do a fantasy point per minute, I don't mind James Johnson as a GPP pivot. I'm not playing him in cash. I'd much rather go with Al-Farouq Aminu. And I don't mind also, excuse me, on the opposite side of the ball from Aminu, I don't mind Trevor Booker. I think he's an interesting pivot as well. Booker, same thing, fantasy point per minute. Problem is Booker really only gets 25 minutes. You know, you're not going to see too much upside from Trevor Booker when he's not getting 30 minutes, and he's really only getting 25 minutes recently. So there's that to consider. At center, it's the most obvious play in the world. It's Yusuf Nurkic at 6'4". Nurk has just been crushing, and I don't think that there's any reason to go away from him here. He's got an excellent matchup. The price and the minutes are just absolutely awesome. Brooklyn's terrible against the center. He's hit two games above 40 since joining the Blazers. They're clearly featuring him. He's clearly the center that they need. You know, he's even succeeded in some of the toughest center matchups out there. You know, he's obviously gone above 40 points in good matchups, which I didn't even think that the matchup with Steven Adams was good, but he said otherwise and went for 50. He went for 40 against Vooch, which we know is a good matchup, right? However, he also went for almost 30 against Drummond and Gobert. That tells you something about the quality of the player, and it tells you something about his role in this offense. You know, he is soaking up double-digit rebounds in those games. He's got a nice soft touch around the rim. He's been getting the minutes as long as he isn't in foul trouble. With that Toronto game, he was in foul trouble, to be clear. So if you're looking at that one, you're going, oh, well, what happened? Foul trouble. So I like Nurkic quite a bit in this situation, and you should too. I think a lot, he'll be highly owned. And, you know, it's one of those situations where, just like the other night, he's super highly owned, okay? People are on him. And if he goes off, then you rise with everybody, okay? And you go all the way up through the ranks with everyone. I was in the shitty situation of not being on Nurkic. And when it would have been great if he flopped, but when he went off, he single-handedly knocked me out of cash in all formats. So, you know, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Big Bear talked about this in that interview. And if you haven't listened to the interview episode with Big Bear and Average Joe, go back, listen to it. It's excellent. Big Bear talked about this and, you know, said that there's kind of like a couple plays every night where you kind of have to be on them. It was Russ last night. You know, Russ goes for 80, and he was owned above 70%. You had to be on Russ if you wanted a fighting chance. He was he scored the most points on the slate. And if you weren't on Russ, you had to make sure that you were definitely on Kyrie and LeBron. Or else you would have been tilting the hell out of Russell Westbrook going for 80 against the Suns. So I like Nurkic quite a bit. In the bargain basement, let's go ahead and dive down here below 5K, 5K value guys. At point guard, we've got two. I don't mind Jameer Nelson going up against Kemba Walker defense. We know Nelson has 30-point upside in plus matchups. No problem with the minutes right now. He was sick last game, which is why he sat. I think he should be healthy at home in this situation. Jameer Nelson is absolutely fine. Malcolm Brogdon playing well, getting starters minutes, although he did lose some minutes last night to Delhi. Brogdon is kind of, he's frustrating, but he's in a decent situation at 5-1. You could do worse. I think at shooting guard, you've got two options. Gary Harris at 5-4, and then Allen Crabbe at 3-5. He's got Brooklyn. He's a second-unit shooting guard for Portland. He has 20-point upside. He's not very good at real-life basketball. And I don't know. I think, I really like the 6-7K tier. I may fade Crab in this situation. At small forward, it's pretty obvious. Harkless is a really good play tonight against Brooklyn at 4-8. He is rock solid for 4-5X. You know, he doesn't have to do a ton of scoring, but in this situation, he should be able to do a ton of scoring. Plays good defense, maybe get out in transition, get a couple free buckets. He doesn't shoot the three or anything, but he does lock down on defense. He doesn't lock down on defense. He plays solid defense, and you see higher scores from Harkless when he's in a good defensive situation because he gets you some steals and blocks and stuff like that. Although on the opposite side of the ball, I don't mind Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Hollis-Jefferson in pace-up situations has flashed 20-30-point upside. I think in GPPs, you could go sleepy and go with Hollis-Jefferson over Harkless and hope that he outscores him by a couple points. At power forward, there's really only one serious value option that I'll consider tonight, and it's Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis at 4-4. I don't like his matchup with Blake. It's not a great DVP situation, but Portis has been getting 30-plus minutes, and we saw what he did with those 30 minutes against Golden State, and that was against Draymond. So, okay, if he can do it against Draymond and run the floor, I don't understand why we don't think he maybe can do it against Blake. You know, I think the difference is that he's going to deal with Blake and DeAndre. So I don't mind Portis at all in this situation. At 4-4, he's a pretty good value. At center, I've got a real sneaky GPP play for you. If you're off Nurk, here's where you go. You go to Nene. Very sneaky. These are the situations where Nene gets his minutes. When the opposite side of the ball has a solid back-to-the-basket physical center, that's when they play Nene. They play him for 20-plus minutes. They'll rest him against those small ball teams. They won't give him minutes in the team against the teams that they're running against, but they will give him 20-plus minutes against solid centers, so for his defense. So he, I wouldn't be surprised if you see Nene start tonight. At 4-4, he's easily gone for 6-6. He's had two games against Memphis where he scored 24 points. And if you look at his game logs recently, he can take 16, 20 minutes, and he can get you 24 points. Nene is very, very sleepy. I like him quite a bit. I don't think there's any reason to not consider him, you know, in your GPP lineups. You get a lot of savings, and you get potential upside. He runs a really nice pick and roll with Harden. And he's a veteran, man. He's a big, solid veteran, and they're going to use him to match up with Marc Gasol. They're not going to give him 30 minutes, but they'll give him 20, and he could go fantasy point for a minute for you there. And at that price, you'll take it. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into lineup lock. You know, like I said, there are a lot of interesting ways to go tonight. I think the question is, how do you build your core? You know, where do you start? I think for me, I'm absolutely starting with Goran Dragic. I'm absolutely going to start with Al-Farouq Aminu and Yusuf Nurkic. Now, those are my three. I think then at shooting guard, what I have to consider is do I go with McCollum at 7-6, or do I go down to maybe a Batum and a Gary Harris? And I think what I'll do is I'll probably go with Batum and Gary Harris, opposite sides of the ball. I like the price there, and I like the savings. That's going to allow me 7-1 at every other position. And I think what I'll do is I'll put Kemba in there at 8-5. Then I'm going to take Mo Harkless at 4-8 against Brooklyn. And I've kind of maxed out how many Brooklyn players I want now. I don't really want... One of my strategies, by the way, and I've talked to people about this before, guys, I really like to stack up value players, in situations when you have a really plus matchup. I'm not going to play all the studs against a team. Like last night, I didn't want to play Hayward and Gobert because they didn't have to do what they needed to do. You play your lower cost players against these really good teams. And when you play the lower cost players, the upside is basically that you're going to see them maximize their point per dollar value. Okay, so... Now, we have two more spots at power forward and small forward left here, and we're going to basically need a stud. So do we need a LeBron? Do we need a Jimmy? Or do we want a Jokic? Okay, given my recent flirtation with 4X from a stud, I'm going to go with LeBron. Now, that's going to force me to make a couple changes here. If I go with LeBron, I can go at power forward 2, I can go down to Bobby Portis, right? Solid cash gameplay, no problem with that. But I then can't afford to have Kemba in there at 8-5. I don't know if I love that, but not being able to have Kemba, I think what I'll need to do then is I got to go down to Mike Conley. Which I'm okay with. Mike Conley has a really nice pace-up situation here in Houston. I don't love Patrick Beverley defense, but at the same time, he's had two solid outings against the Rockets this year, above 37 points in both of those. You know, so I don't mind Mike Conley at all in this situation. So here's where we're at. There's also a lineup that I had earlier where I'm also capable of getting. Also capable of getting in Jimmy Butler and Jokic, which I may go with. I'm not sure. So we'll see. Mike Conley, Goran Dragic, Nick Batum, Gary Harris, Mo Harkless, LeBron, Bobby Portis, Al-Farouq Aminu, and Yusuf Nurkic. That's where I'm at here. So let's go through the logic of each one of these plays. Mike Conley, pace up point guard, ball handler, in one of the higher pace games on the night. Goran Dragic, pace up ball handler in a high total here, highest scorer for Miami. Nick Batum, great DVP situation, pace up situation. Gary Harris, great DVP situation, rock solid minutes, good price. Mo Harkless, great matchup against Brooklyn, well priced. LeBron James, he's LeBron. Bobby Portis, he starters minutes, not a great matchup, but starters minutes in a very, very good price given minutes. Al-Farouq Aminu, great matchup, great price, and 30-point ceiling. Yusuf Nurkic, he's getting one of the best matchups on the slate. So Conley, Dragic, Batum, Harris, Harkless, James, Portis, Aminu. Now, let me show you one thing that you can do here. If you get off of Batum, which, you know, I don't mind, and you go to Allen Crabb, you're gonna open up a lot of real estate. So you can get off of Portis, you can get yourself a Kemba Walker in there. You can get yourself CJ McCollum in there, things like that. So Allen Crabb does open up the slate a little bit. I may end up playing him, just locking him in as a punt play. And I have no problem locking Allen Crabb, Mo Harkless, and Al-Farouq Aminu as the three cheapest Blazers there, and just kind of building around them and just kind of nice plugs in. So I'm not sure what I'll end up with necessarily as my final line, but I think I would add a pretty strong cash core right here in what feels like a very, you know, safe cash game play with a nice solid floor for tonight. So that's it, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Good luck tonight in your contest, and I will see you on Monday.